Welcome to How to Save a Planet. I'm Alex Blumberg. This is the show about what we need to do to address climate change and how to make those things happen. The 90s, a magical time.
America Online, a new way to use your computer to communicate, have fun, and get instant news and information.
We dialed up, we browsed the World Wide Web, we asked Jeeves all our burning questions, and we watched the NASDAQ stock exchange rise fivefold as new internet companies like Amazon and eBay formed. But then, in 2000, all that changed.
It's described as nothing short of breathtaking, a points drop never before seen on the U.S. markets.
The dot-com bubble burst and the NASDAQ dropped almost 77%. This led to many things, the instantly iconic collapse of Pets.com, a recession, and to today's guest taking a job at ExxonMobil. His name is Darlan Chang, and in 2003, he had just graduated from the University of Illinois with his PhD in mechanical engineering, with plans to work in the automotive industry.
But it didn't work out because of the dot-com financial crash that affected the automotive industry much more than the energy industry, and there weren't a lot of jobs for automotive industry people. So it ended up that people that would have normally gone to Ford or normally gone to Michigan, they ended up going to Texas.
Gotcha.
And I ended up working there my entire career from 2003 to 2019.
2019, when he quit working at Exxon. And that 16-year career is what we're talking to Darlan Chang about on today's episode. Because during that 16-year career, he got to see inside the workings of one of the largest and most prominent fossil fuel companies in the world, through the fracking boom and extreme weather events. And during those 16 years, more and more people were waking up to the threat of climate change and to Exxon's role in escalating it. One of those people was Darlan himself, who over time was finding it harder and harder to reconcile what he was seeing happening to the Earth and his job inside a fossil fuel giant.
Oil companies in general, and Exxon perhaps even in particular, are seen somewhat as like the Death Star, sort of the enemy, the villain in the story. What do you think the popular stereotype of like the big bad oil company gets right? What do you think it gets wrong?
I think it does get right that it is a bit like working for the Empire. I did feel like a stormtrooper at the end, and I did feel like I was seeing atrocity so bad that I could no longer stand to be with the Empire.
Today, Darlan Chang's story. What brought him to work for Exxon in the first place, what it was like to spend 16 years there while his concerns about climate change grew, and what finally compelled him to leave. That's coming up after the break.
There are two things that are absolutely true. Grandma loves you, and she would never say no to McDonald's. So treat yourself to a Grandma McFlurry with your order today. It's what Grandma would want. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Welcome back to Collector's Closet, presented by the Ohio Lottery. Let's discuss my newest prize possession, this new $10 scratch-off, the $500,000 Platinum Jackpot. The best method I've found so far to help it hold its value is to vacuum seal it. This thing cannot get scratched. What's that? Sorry, my producer's telling me the only way it could be worth up to 500 grand is if I do scratch it? Okay, well, in that case, definitely don't overprotect your $500,000 Platinum Jackpot scratch-offs. Play them! Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back. We're talking to Darlan Chang, a former Exxon engineer. And back in 2002, when Exxon was recruiting Darlan, climate change was on his radar, but it wasn't necessarily his top priority.
My top priority at the time was my concern about fossil fuels being a limited resource.
Gotcha.
And that we needed to transition away from it before it started to really run out. And we'd have huge price spikes that would cause people not to be able to afford to run a society.
In other words, he was concerned about something called peak oil. This was an idea you heard a lot back then, that the total global supply of oil and gas was about to peak. And as that supply started to dwindle, oil and gas prices would start to rise, eventually going through the roof and causing economic chaos and societal unrest. To Darlan and his other engineering school friends, it seemed clear that society needed to invest in other sources of energy right now to get ready for peak oil. And he had his favorite.
We had a lot of nuclear engineers on campus, and the nuclear engineers were really optimistic that fusion was just around the corner, just 10 to 15 years away. And I kind of bought into that talk as well.
The techno-utopian dream.
Yes.
And at that time, in 2003, your nuclear engineering friends were saying, like, no, this is close. We're close.
Yes, there were even nuclear engineering professors who were saying that. They were very optimistic at the time.
Got it.
When I did get an interview with ExxonMobil, I did express my concerns about what they were going to do about this transition away from fossil fuels. And I was told by the recruiters and my peers that had left the University of Illinois and graduated and went to ExxonMobil that, yes, this is one of the largest energy companies in the world. This is an energy company. So oil and gas just happens to be what's economical right now. But it will be part of the transition away from fossil fuels. I believe that because they told me ExxonMobil had been involved with nuclear back in the 1980s. I was thinking that nuclear fusion was going to be the next step.
Darlan's worries were assuaged enough that he took the job. And we should say, we spoke to two of Darlan's former co-workers about the things he told us in this interview, and they corroborated much of what he said. They said that they were also told that Exxon was an energy company, not just an oil and gas company. And the division that Darlan was hired to work for seemed to emphasize that idea more so than the rest of the company. He was hired as an engineer for the Upstream Research Company. This is a research arm of ExxonMobil that developed new energy projects to be deployed out in the field. And his first unit even had a tagline. They were working on the, quote, bridge fuel to the future. In URC, Darlan worked on projects to decarbonize the production of natural gas, projects which he thought were leading to the nuclear fusion renewable energy future. It seemed to Darlan like the right place to be in the company to help with the transition away from fossil fuels. And that transition seemed increasingly necessary. Soon after Darlan arrived at the company, his fears about peak oil seemed like they were being realized because oil prices had started to skyrocket, exactly as peak oil advocates said they would.
When I started with the company in 2003, it was around $30 a barrel. And then in 2008, it got all the way up to $147 a barrel.
Right.
So this almost five times increase in oil price seemed to be signaling that we were reaching the point where we could no longer increase the production in oil. So I thought that that was really something that we needed to urgently address as a company.
The fear is like this is just the beginning and it's going to continue to double or triple every couple of years. And eventually it's just going to be unaffordable for everyday people. And it's just going to like grind the global economy to a halt, essentially.
Yes. Unfortunately, management wasn't really focused on that at the time. They were just focused on taking advantage of the high oil prices.
Right. The thing we're selling is now worth like three times what it was worth before.
Yeah, it was almost five times, actually. Finally, yeah. We're getting our payback after enduring the 80s and 90s when the oil prices were low.
And these high oil prices came about as a new technology was coming on the scene.
The fracking boom is thanks to oil and gas companies using new drilling technology to extract fuel from the ground.
We think that the production of domestic oil and the production of domestic natural gas liquids can lead to a renaissance. Dozens of oil and gas
companies. Fracking is an unconventional drilling method that allowed drillers to access oil and gas they previously hadn't been able to get to. And that unlocked a whole new supply of fossil fuels. And Exxon went all in on this boom with their $41 billion purchase of XTO, a natural gas drilling company, in 2010. After this purchase, Darlan says the focus of his work started to change. It wasn't about figuring out how to get the energy of the future. It was about how to get the absolute last drop of the energy of today.
Rather than focusing on making natural gas a bridge fuel and getting us to some other energy source, we were being pivoted to focusing on making hydraulic fracturing profitable. I was working on what was called a drilling advisory system. And this system was to help make this mass production of drilling lots of wells much more standard, because you end up with different drillers. They have different habits. It's like having different chefs, different cooks. Mm-hmm. So the idea of the drilling advisory system was to have them do a more standard procedure that everybody agreed on would be optimal in the long run.
Figuring out how to more efficiently extract natural gas seemed to Darlan like the exact wrong thing to be doing. Especially because, to Darlan, this natural gas boom, it wasn't going to solve peak oil. In his opinion, fracking was just delaying the inevitable.
These wells did not produce like conventional wells. Conventional wells, you could rely on them for decades. But these wells, they just give you a puff of production for a few years, and then they die down very quickly. You hit peak after a few years rather than a few decades. And so you got to constantly drill many, many wells and constantly fracture many, many rocks in order to keep this going.
And when you saw that happen, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought that management was desperate, and I thought we were going in the wrong direction. And even in recruiting, we were no longer encouraged to talk to people about other energy that ExxonMobil could go into.
Right.
So new recruits, the story was, We're not an energy company anymore. We're an oil and gas company.
Oh, wow.
We just focus on oil and gas. Other people can do other energy. It's not our specialty.
Darlan's frustrations with Exxon were growing, but the real breaking point came after Darlan started to worry about another global threat brought about by fossil fuel dependence. Not a peak oil-induced economic collapse, but climate change. Darlan's climate change awakening and what it meant for his life inside Exxon, that's coming up.
There are two things that are absolutely true. Grandma loves you, and she would never say no to McDonald's. So treat yourself to a Grandma McFlurry with your order today. It's what Grandma would want. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Salute big savings this Memorial Day with Blinds.com. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact, and Blinds.com makes it easy. Choose premium blinds, shutters, and outdoor shades, just in time for summer fun. Get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost, all backed by Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Memorial Day sale now for up to 50% off, plus premium door busters. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Looking to invest? Start your journey by exploring exchange-traded funds with GlobalX ETFs. Exchange-traded funds, or ETFs for short, create baskets of stocks, bonds, and other assets that you can buy in a single trade. GlobalX specializes in ETFs that track emerging trends, like the rise of artificial intelligence, as well as strategies aimed to generate income potential. Visit GlobalXETFs.com to discover how you can get started.
Welcome back. In his early years at Exxon, Darlan Chang was mainly concerned about peak oil as the reason the company needed to transition away from fossil fuels. But the impact of extreme weather events where he lived in Texas made him concerned about something else: climate change.
The eye of Hurricane Ike is moving toward major population areas along the Gulf Coast. Officials describe Lake today as potentially catastrophic. This storm touched land hours earlier than predicted. Take a look at this latest satellite
image. It was only a few months after my daughter was born. She was only a 2 month old when Hurricane Ike hit and knocked out power in the Houston area for a couple weeks for many people. For my home, it was 4 days. But we were also out of water. We didn't have running water and didn't have electricity for 4 days. Our cell phone service also didn't work. So we were stranded with a newborn.
Hurricane Ike was just the beginning. In 2017, Darlan's family had to evacuate again, this time for Hurricane Harvey, which brought unprecedented rainfall to the Houston area.
My daughter had to wade through knee-high level water, and we just evacuated in time before we had to be rescued by boat.
Wow.
So we got out like a couple days before. We ended up going to San Marcos, that was 2.5 hours away. Even there, when we went out, the water was above my daughter's ankles. And that really hit home the impact of extreme weather events.
A study later found that climate change made Hurricane Harvey's rainfall 3 times more likely and 15% more intense. Climate change and ExxonMobil's role in it were coming into focus for Darlan. Exxon produced oil and gas that created greenhouse gas emissions when it was burned that were expected to contribute to more storms like these. And there was another major contributor that was really weighing on Darlan: methane leaks. Methane is a greenhouse gas that's many times more potent than carbon dioxide, though it doesn't linger in the atmosphere as long. And recent studies have shown that oil and gas infrastructure may be leaking much more methane into the atmosphere than we thought. But Darlan says that isn't a surprise to him.
As engineers, you assume it's going to leak unless right. you do something about it. And for the broader public and the mainstream, the assumption is that you're innocent until proven guilty. Right. You got to have people with sensors and measurements mm-hmm. to actually verify that you're having gas leaks. But from an engineering point of view, you assume that it's going to happen unless you do something to prevent it.
Right.
And I knew that this was going to be a recipe for disaster for overall methane emissions.
Did you talk about this with people? Like, did you talk? What was the conversation inside Exxon for you and your peers about this?
Yeah, I was finding that people were becoming more hostile to me talking about why aren't we pivoting away from fossil fuels. Some people had drunk the Kool-Aid and had come up with rationalizations for why oil and gas was the way to go. Some going so far to say that the climate scientists are just trying to put us out of business. They're just fudging and exaggerating data in order to make the oil and gas industry go out of business. Mm-hmm. I think it's human nature. Many people that were at URC are natural introverts, very technically focused. They want to do their technical work. Some people do their technical work and see the flashing alarm bells, and then it makes them more motivated to leave. For others, they can go the opposite way, which is to rationalize that it's the rest of the world that's out to get them, while their technical work is going to save the world.
So you're becoming increasingly alarmed. You're seeing around you, your colleagues in the engineering side are like, if anything, going the other way. What are you doing with all that? How are you managing?
I did my best to speak up internally. I would speak up at employee forums. I would speak out loudly during lunches with supervisors and management. I would speak to new recruits. And actually, it was new recruits that were the most receptive to my message because they were like, wow, I don't hear this from anybody else at the company. But what you say really makes sense that we ought to be pivoting the company away from fossil fuels. My experience was that the higher up you went up in management, the less receptive you were to this. Mm-hmm. Because in order to move up the ladder, you had to drink the Kool-Aid. You had to agree with what the executives at the top already believed.
By the mid-20-teens, Darlan was seriously considering leaving Exxon. He started saving up money and applied for new jobs in renewable energy. And around this time, he also found out about a net zero neighborhood being built in Colorado. In 2018, when he heard that the neighborhood had a house for him, if he wanted it, he started making plans to leave Exxon for real. So with 1 foot out the door, a couple years of savings, and a house waiting for him in Colorado, Darlan spoke out one final time in a big Exxon meeting in 2019, where new leadership shared their plans for his division.
I originally went into that meeting not expecting to say anything, but I found myself getting more and more aggravated as the meeting went on. And I just couldn't take it anymore. I stood up and asked the question, given the recent reports from the IPCC saying that we need to reduce our emissions in half by 2030 to have a reasonable chance at avoiding runaway catastrophic climate change, how is this consistent with increasing our oil and gas production over the next 6 years? And the answer I got was society will decide how much oil and gas we can produce responsibly. And our role is just to produce as big a slice of that wedge that is allowed by society as possible.
Like, we're just going to ride this to the very end.
Yeah, to me, what he was saying was we're confident that society is not going to restrict oil and gas production. So we're going to produce as much as we possibly can.
How did you feel hearing that answer? Was that surprising?
It wasn't surprising, but it did enrage me. When I left that meeting, I was shaking. I was so angry.
What made you so angry about it, do you think?
It confirmed what I'd experienced all the while, that I had been promised, in a sense, by working for a very large energy company, that I was going to be part of the responsible path of society.
Right.
I wasn't going to be contributing to destroying people's lives. And yet, after 16 years, that's exactly what I ended up doing. A lot of my most successful projects, they contributed to making oil and gas used more and contributed to more greenhouse gas emissions, and ultimately will contribute to climate disasters happening now and going into the future.
We ran everything Darlan told us by Exxon. In an email back, they said that Darlan's perspective was inaccurate, incomplete, and dated, although they didn't provide specifics on which part of his account they took issue with. And they pointed us to their own Advancing Climate Solutions 2022 Progress Report on their website for a complete summary of the company's plans, which have been updated since the meeting that Darlan attended in 2019. In fact, we did an entire episode on the fight to get Exxon's leadership to change direction called The Shareholders versus Exxon, which can give you some context on why their plans might have changed. But back to our story. Soon after that meeting in 2019, Darlan quit Exxon, and he and his family moved 1,000 miles away to a net zero neighborhood in Colorado. His new house has solar panels on the roof, no natural gas hookups, and chargers in the garage for his electric cars that he wanted to drive to work at Exxon, but they wouldn't install charging stations on campus. It's a complete 180 from his life before, a life he says he felt was making the world worse.
As a former person who escaped, I'm here to say that I escaped for good reason. And I know people who want to escape too, but they feel trapped because of being in mid-career and not having another place to go to. They have to support their families. And like a lot of Americans, they took on a lot of debt in order to get their advanced degrees. So they're not in a position that they can speak out like I am.
How many people like you are there, do you think, inside these fossil fuel companies?
There's highly educated, well-trained people who did not get raised on petroleum. And they can see the bigger picture. They can see where society is heading and the implications for their own children. But they need to make a living.
That thing about making a living, that might be part of why oil and gas workers who would leave haven't left yet. Darlan quit his job at Exxon 3 years ago, and he still hasn't found a new job. His family is living off their savings and his wife's income. Darlan's mainly been looking for work in geothermal energy, where you extract heat from the earth by drilling these super deep wells. It's a natural fit for oil and gas engineers who also know quite a bit about drilling deep into the earth. But Darlan says there's just not that many geothermal jobs out there yet. And this brings up a question. What exactly are the millions of people who work in the fossil fuel industry, everyone from geologists to coal miners, what are they supposed to do when their livelihoods depend on fossil fuels, but we are now transitioning away from a fossil fuel economy? Some governments have started to try to figure this out using the principles of what's called a just transition, a framework that came out of the labor union and environmental justice movements. And its aim is to secure workers' rights and livelihoods as economies shift away from fossil fuels. For example, the EU has a just transition fund to help member countries like Poland, which still uses coal to generate around 70% of its electricity,
transition to a green economy.
I understand changes taking place in the mining industry are necessary, but those changes have to put people first. There must be a just and fair transition securing their existence.
That's a mining union leader in Poland. Just transition efforts in the U.S. have been mostly on the state and local level and focused mostly on coal. For example, New Mexico's renewable energy policy includes severance and job retraining in renewables for coal workers in the state. And after a year of major losses in fossil fuel jobs, 20 to 25% in some sectors, the call for a just transition in the U.S. is starting to come from inside the House.
The United Mine Workers of America, which represents West Virginia coal miners, urged Senator Joe Manchin on Monday to revisit his opposition to President Biden's Build Back Better plan.
That's the Coal Miners Union, which represents miners in West Virginia, calling on West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin to support Joe Biden's renewable energy legislation, the Build Back Better plan, something that coal mining groups historically have not been that excited about. They support this plan, though, because it provides assistance for miners in the transition away from coal. Figuring out a just transition will be central to allowing those who want to leave the fossil fuel industry to make that transition with jobs on the other side. So there can be a lot more Darlans in the next decade. And that brings us to our patented How to Save a Planet calls to action. If you are into the idea of a just transition, check out the Blue-Green Alliance and the Just Transition Fund for ways to get involved. How to Save a Planet is a Spotify original podcast and Gimlet production. It's hosted by me, Alex Bloomberg. This episode was produced by Anna Ladd. The rest of our reporting and producing team includes Kendra Pierre-Lewis, Rachel Waldholz, Hannah Chin, and Daniel Ackerman. Our supervising producer is Caitlin Bogucki. Our editor is Caitlin Kenny. Our intern, Nicole Welch. Sound design and mixing by Peter Leonard and Lonnie Rowe, with original music by Peter Leonard and Emma Munger. Our fact checker for this episode is Claudia Geib. Thanks for listening. See you next week.